Can I get 5 listeners to become BAI buddies? You can be one of them. By going to givetowbai.org and signing up with a $10 a month donation for each of the next 12 months. Thanks. And stay tuned.
You cannot be on the side of this president and be on the side of truth. And if we are to survive as a nation, we must choose truth. Because if the truth doesn't matter, if the news you don't like is fake, if cheating in election is acceptable, if everyone is as wicked as the wickedest among us, then the hope for the future is lost. The eyes of the nation are upon this Senate, and what they see will strike doubt in the heart of even the most ardent patriot.
And you are tuned to listener-sponsored, non-commercial Pacifica Radio, New York City. WBAI, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and streaming at WBAI.org. What's the Frequency, Kenneth, with Paul Fisher, was brought to you on recording. Stay tuned for Hour of the Wolf. Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly, well, mostly weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. With us this morning via Skype will be Dan Persons, and we're going to discuss, the awards season in cinema and things like that. Stay tuned.
Good
morning. Okay, we have a movie review that's going to be coming up shortly, but I wanted to do some other things. Also, I'm stalling while I'm setting up Skype, which I don't need to. Oh, there we go. Skip to my loo. There we are. Continue. Very good. Okay. Excellent. Okay. So, we'll have Dan join us on Skype. He's also on recording. But before I did that, or any other thing, it is important to note that, yes, we're in another fund drive. I'm on this week. I am preempted next week. But it is urgent. It is essential. With all of the bupkis that is going on with this radio station, that we do this stuff. Yes, we're looking into other ways. Our program director has been talking to us all about alternate ways of pitching on the air, of making money, this and that. And what we are focusing on, at least what I am focusing on, and have been advised to focus on, are what are called BAI buddies. And I'm going to pitch this for about 3 or 4 minutes, and then I'm going to play either a song or a movie review. And then we'll have Dan Persons on the air, and we're going to discuss, oh, the last few years, and particularly this past year in genre cinema, well, all cinema for the past year, genre cinema and TV. And the upcoming Oscars, which, of course, are this Sunday. And the problems with them, the possible goodness of any of them. And that's the plan. But we got to do this BAI buddy thing. Now, some people I know are very wary of the BAI buddy thing. They don't like the idea of a hand going into their pocket every month and churning it out. But the way that I describe it, people have been using weird kinds of explanations, but I have a very, very simple way to describe what a BAI buddy is. You probably have heard of Patreon. For a while, there was another service called Drip or D-Rip. That one was part of Kickstarter. And I don't actually recall who owns Patreon. But the idea is that individuals say, hey, I am a creator. Support me for doing this, that, or the other thing. Unfortunately, some people sometimes go on the air to do that. And, well, that's just wrong, because what we're supposed to be raising money for is the radio station. So, but the idea is that the BAI buddy is the same kind of a thing. Now, when you're on Patreon, usually you say, okay, you are one of my patrons and you're giving X dollars a month and you can get in at this tier or that tier or that tier. And in exchange, I will give you material or, a welcome card or something that you won't be getting if you're not a patron. Maybe you'll get advance notice or something. And, well, BAI already does that. What we give you is the radio station. The gift, the thing that we give you, is already there. And otherwise, the idea of becoming a BAI buddy is just like that. The only difference is that we have put you on the highest tier to begin with. We give you some excellent programming. I mean, if you listened to What's the Frequency, Kenneth, that show that Paul Fisher produces. Paul is amazing. We are so lucky to have people of that quality and background on our air. For those who don't know Paul Fisher, he was our news director during most of the Vietnam years, and that is much of what made this station famous, was our countercultural news coverage. And then he went west to, I think he went to KPFA, as opposed to KPFK. Wherever he went, he was the person who got to speak, the only person in news media who dealt with and spoke with Patty Hearst. And then, you know, he comes back to Pacifica for a little while, and he gets snatched up by the CBS Evening News, where he was the head writer for like 29 years for Dan Rather. In other words, if Dan Rather said it, Paul wrote it. I remember being at Margot Adler's house during a more cheerful presidential election than the ones we've been dealing with. And we were there with several of Paul's friends and we're watching the thing. And all of a sudden there's an elbow and somebody, I don't recall who, says, "You see that? That's the sweater I needed, Paul. That's Paul's elbow." Anyway. When CBS got rid of Dan Rather through some trickery that came out of the Bush administration, the other person, the collateral damage, was Paul. And so what he does nowadays is he works from home. He works from home partly for health purposes, which we don't need to get into, but what he does at home is he produces this show, What's the Frequency, Kenneth? And it is just wonderful. It's the same kind of thing in a way that Peter Beauchamp does, except that it involves up-to-the-minute news. And it is oh so clever. Why am I pitching his show? Because it's a great show that's on BAI. We have several that are great and getting better. We now have, hey, Max, when is that folk music show on? Ah, he was out there in the kitchen a moment ago. But Ed Haber, the wonderful Ed Haber, who's the person who introduced me to Steel Eye Span, which I play a lot of, and that was many, many, a couple of score ago, and Richard Barr, former music director of WBAI, a person who was here for quite a few years, and is rumored is related to Linda Perry Barr, are doing a folk music show. And Max has the Golden Age of Radio and Dustbin of History. And I have Hour of the Wolf. And you know what? And Dave Kenny's show. And Cat Radio Cafe. All of these shows, including Paul's show, which is news-oriented, all of these shows are arts-oriented, which is bringing BAI pretty much back to its roots, where, frankly, I believe it belongs. That doesn't mean not doing politics. We have never not done politics, including in our arts shows. The point is that you have to have a sense of humor, a sense of art about what it is that you are doing in order to get people to listen to what you are saying and what you are doing. You can't be just dry all the time. And so it is imperative, by becoming a BAI buddy as opposed to just giving a straight donation, what you are doing is you're helping our budget. That means if, say, you become a buddy at $10 a year, excuse me, a month, 10 bucks a month, which I think is the low point. Maybe there's a $5, but it's in increments of $5, I think, starting at 10. It means that, let's say that you become a BAI buddy for $10 a month. What that means is that we can factor in $120 for a year. We can count on that money coming in. And in some ways, given how you have to establish budgets and how all this stuff works, in some ways, that $120 promised into the future, 10 bucks a month, can be more valuable than the $150 one-time pledge, which will go immediately into, you know, money that we owe already. But we have to be looking in two directions at once. We have to play Janis. That's J-A-N-U-S. I mean, it's okay if we play some Janis Joplin, but you have to look, we have to deal, you know, pay our debts of the past, and we have to be preparing for the future. It's a rocky future ahead. And the BAI buddy concept is one that helps us do that. To become a BAI buddy, you can do it one of two ways. Three ways, actually. Number one is you can take your web browser and type in give to WBAI.org. And yeah, I know everybody makes a big point of saying the number two. I'm going to be rebellious and saying, don't do that. Type in T-O. It's easier to remember. Give T-O-W-B-A-I.org. I promise you it'll work just as easily, just as well as the number two. Okay, that's methodology number one. Methodology number two, go to WBAI.org and then click on, okay, let me see exactly what it says, since I do have a browser in front of me, or do I? Yes, I have. Here it is. It's actually got my face on it. I don't know why. On the little icon. Okay, so WBAI.org, org. Okay. Come on, new tab. Spin your stuff. Yeah, okay, and you will then see, moment that you go there, you will see on the front page ways to donate, and click on, and you click on online donation site, and that will immediately bring you to give to WBAI.org. You see, it's the same thing, but it's a lot easier to remember. And that is where you can become a BAI buddy. And you can look at favorite show, e-donation, and things like that. But the very first thing you'll see is BAI Buddy Monthly Donation. And this is probably the easiest and best way to do it. The third option is you can make a phone call. You can make a pledge. Good old style, call BAI, make a pledge. 516-620-3602. Again, that number in New York City is actually on Long Island with the 516. 516-620-3602. So please, I'm going to do at least one more pitch during this show, but the better that we do, the better results that we get, the less pitching I will do. But it is imperative to the radio station, to this radio program, and also, by the way, one of the ways that they decide what shows are on during the fund drives is what shows are the best at raising funds. Now, I don't believe in the thing of, oh, you know, we're not putting your show on the air because it didn't make money during the drive. And things don't really work that way. But it does work that way during the drive. We're not putting you on during the drives, which seem endless because, well, they are. We're not putting you on during the drive because you're not raising money. That is, after all, the point of the drive. So, 516-620-3602 or go to WBAI.org. Oh, yes, and as a BAI buddy, you get a membership card with perks. Perks, is that like free coffee? And you get even better, a BAI buddy tote bag. Actually, it's just a WBAI tote bag, but it's the BAI buddies who get them. And I have to say, they're fairly sturdy, and I like the logo. Everybody else at the station goes, it's terrible. No, the previous logo was terrible. I, of course, go back to the good old Pacifica Dove. That is my favorite. But the current logo that with the headphones, that's pretty good. Okay, that's the pitch for now. Now, the next step is let's listen to Dan Person's review. And while we do that, I'm going to go and try to get Dan on Skype. And what's more, because of the way things work, or some are designed, I should say, as opposed to work around here, you'll probably hear me getting Dan. You know what? No. Let's just do it live. Let's just do it now. Go into Skype, make sure that he's there, that we're all set up, and then I will contact him. Okay, so here we are. I click that thing. Okay. And where's... okay. Click the call icon. Oh, helps if I put on headphones, right? Otherwise, I don't hear him. But I can see, Dan, I have to open a pot here, don't I? You there?
Yeah. Yes, I am there.
Okay, very good.
I'm here. You're there.
Yeah. I was contacting you as WBAI. You didn't answer.
Oh, really?
Yes, I sent you an invite to friend WBAI.
I did not see that. I've been listening to the show, and I had Skype reduced, hidden.
Ah, well, you see that causes problems because I was
that.
Okay, so any rate, so we've got you there. You'll be on hold. I'm going to play your movie review now.
Works for me.
Okay, so stand by, and audience. Now this is weird. Okay, there must be a way using this that I can. I want to hang up on Dan. But I will mute. Ah, there we go. Dan, are you muted? Say something, Dan.
Oops.
You said oops. Dan, say something. Okay, good. So he is muted until this is over, and now he will be unmuted with his pre-recorded review.
I'm Dan Persons, and this is my Hour of the Wolf review. I'm not going to tell you the ending of Weathering with You, the new Japanese anime film that's currently playing in theaters in New York at least one more day today. Better get to it fast. It's at 11 a.m. But I'm not going to tell you the ending because it's a spoiler.
Can you hear me?
But I will say it does present a most striking metaphor for the beauty and intensity of pure love, of the world can go to hell as long as I'm with you variety. It'd be a moving finale if anything in the film was actually moving. A teenage boy, Hodaka, runs away from home to a Tokyo that is inexplicably awash in nonstop rainstorms. He finds shelter with a sympathetic wastrel and the woman who lives with him, both of whom work as quote-unquote journalists for the Japanese equivalent of supermarket tabloids. While researching a story for them, the teenager comes across a young woman, Hina, with the magical ability to suspend the rain in the area around her. Together they form a business, bringing dry skies to weddings, markets, or whoever is in need of a small glimmer of hope within the deluge. And, of course, the more they're together, the more the young man is drawn to the woman's indomitable spirit and generous soul, even as both become aware of the price she must pay if she is to permanently free Tokyo from its curse of nonstop rain. To be fair, director Shinkai Mokudo brings a lot of depth and texture to his rain-washed city. I actually prefer his Tokyo Under Clouds here to the sun-kissed one we occasionally get. But he seems conspicuously reluctant to engage us in his characters' emotional lives, even more than is typical in a film coming out of the taciturn Japanese culture. Hodaka at one point says vaguely that he ran away from home because he felt constrained there. But that's as much as we get for his motivation, and it doesn't explain why we first see him with his face plastered in band-aids. Hina's magical abilities first manifest as she's visiting her dying mother in the hospital, but that tragedy seems isolated from the character we otherwise see. Mokudo compounds the problem by making Hodaka the viewpoint character, turning Hina into a kind of non-manic pixie dream girl who exists only to motivate the boy's growth, even though he's actually denied any perceivable sense of emotional development. Character motivations are inconsistent. One ally abruptly turns adversary for all of a minute before inexplicably turning back. And, in fact, character designs are inconsistent amidst more or less naturalistic renderings of people. A detective shows up with an exaggerated space dandy pompadour, and a Shinto priest is rendered small and troll-like. A lot of times, despite all the obvious effort that's been put into the film, it feels like it's running to template without a lot of effort being invested in making all the beats mean something. Weathering With You has its charms and its sweetness and quite a bit of humor and an ending that somehow manages to embrace fatalism and optimism at the same time. I kept trying to connect with it, wanting it to touch me someplace that would make the experience richer than just an amusing love story. It's unfortunate that the film seemed reluctant to go that extra mile. It would have made a lovely story something to remember. And while I've got you, let me tell you about a project I'm working on that you can enjoy right now. Mystery Science Theater 3000 has been canceled again. But that doesn't mean that we can't have fun with cheesy movies, but in a different way. Historama 3D takes old instructional and promotional shorts and even feature films and runs them through the exclusive Space Brains 3D process. The result is less like watching Avengers Endgame in an IMAX theater and more like receiving an alien broadcast from the surface of Mars sometime in the early 60s, strange, dreamlike, and providing a new perspective into a culture that once was. Our first offering, the MST 3K Classic, Design for Dreaming, is available now, and the next will be up soon if it's not up already. You can find it by going to YouTube and searching on HIST-O-RAMA space 3D. There are two ways to watch. You can kick it really old school and use the classic red and cyan anaglyph 3D glasses. There are instructions on the video page on how you can get your own pair. Or if you have a VR headset, you can watch in dynamic widescreen 3D through the YouTube VR app. Click on the 3D option when you're searching Historama 3D to make things easier. And feel free to get in touch with me on my Facebook page at Historama 3D. No dashes there. Leave those out. Historama 3D. The past was wacky. For Hour of the Wolf, I'm Dan Persons.
And okay, we are back. Dan, are you still there? Okay, let's try it this way. Are you there, Dan?
Yes, I am here.
Okay, I don't know why I was hearing you during that, even though it said it was muted and all that, but during that review, we could hear you.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I wasn't talking to myself, though, so fortunately.
No, you were making noises.
Yeah, I was. I was clicking my pen. Okay. That's true.
Yeah, you were sniffling and stuff. Anyway.
Yeah. I was doing my Donald Trump impression.
What? Not funny.
No. Not at all.
And I'm not being I'm not being humorous. When I say be quiet, well, anyway. Because for some reason, I don't know why, I tried muting the way I've done it in the past, but the software changes weekly. So anyway, interesting stuff. So you had a rather interesting article, which I don't have in front of me. And when I went to Tor.com and I searched for you, it just brought up anything that had the word persons in it.
Oh, wrong search term.
Well, is there a better search term than one would use as the author of a piece?
Yes, there is. It should be DanPersonsTor.com.
No. If you go to Tor.com and you use their search engine.
Oh, don't do that. Use Google.
Nah. No, I like going to websites and using them, you see.
Oh, well. Well, yeah. And,
Dan?
Yes.
Off topic.
Okay. Let's get back on topic.
Yes, exactly. At any rate, you had an interesting piece there, and I would like to actually get it in front of me, but I'm not quite sure how that's going to work. So let's put that aside for the moment. What have been your views of the not counting Oscars, but up to the Oscars, because there are about seven major awards that cover movies, three of which also cover television.
Yeah, something like that. When we were talking before, I mean, you know, my approach is really in...
Let me ask the question.
Okay.
I was just enumerating how many awards there were.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, and my question is, overall, including the SAG Awards, the BAFTAs, the Writers Guild Awards, the Bribe Me Globe Awards, the Directors Guild Awards.
Yeah.
We've already got five right there.
Right.
And we haven't even gotten to the Academy. Was there anything in there that particularly impressed you, particularly involving genre?
Well, genre doesn't have, like, a major presence this year, is what I am noticing. There is, and sort of the genre that we do have is kind of walking the line.
Well, in the Oscars, I said we'd ignore the Oscars, but of the 10 best pictures of the Oscars, three are genre.
That's true. That's true. Parasite, Joker, and Jojo Rabbit. Jojo Rabbit is the one that I haven't seen. I still need to get to that.
Yes, you definitely need to get to that.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's three out of nine, which is for the Oscars, for Best Picture, that's a better showing for genre than typical.
Than in history.
I would agree with that. The thing is, what I feel about Joker and Parasite in particular is that, yes, they are genre, but they kind of walk a line. This is not spaceships and spaceship science fiction dragons fantasy.
They are, however, what we call speculative fiction.
I would agree.
Parasite
with that.
Exists in a universe that does not exist, and Joker is a comic book.
Although
they make it quasi realistic, but it's still the Joker.
Yeah,
it's a comic book.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's true. So,
not a graphic novel, it's a comic book.
there are good showings there. There are films that I felt could have been noted in this that were not. I think in particular, and this may be a controversial stand, I think Us was unjustly ignored.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes. Yeah. So there's always. Well, what films? Okay, so Us is one of what you believe to be a snubbed film. Mm-hmm. Are there others?
As far as action. Sorry.
No, actually. It doesn't matter to me whether it's live action or not. Wasn't one of the Toy Stories once up for a Best Oscar?
I'm not sure a Toy Story was. I'd have to check into.
But there was at least one animated film in the past.
It was either Beauty and the Beast or Lion King.
Lion King was up for Best Oscar.
I think it was Lion King.
Yeah, I think so. So the point is that you don't have to limit it.
Right. And, you know, quite frankly, when the Lion King got a nod for Best Picture, the Academy as a body went and created the Best Animated Feature thing, because they said, we don't want that to happen again.
Which is woefully out of date, because there always should have been one. I mean, just like you have Best International Feature Film, you said Best Foreign Language Film, that didn't mean that it couldn't be Best Picture Film.
That's true. But
these things are not mutually exclusive, not to the Academy, not to me.
That's true, but so, essentially so my, it was so create, my, creating a nice little ghetto
but getting
for
back to,
animated film but to keep getting, to keep getting, it out of the halcyon realm of the best
back
picture.
To my question is, what other films do you think were snubbed? And because you started saying, well, outside of animated, I said, no, include animated. What okay. films do you think were snubbed?
There is one animated film that I feel got snubbed, which was Ne Zha, which is the Chinese animated film. It's a Chinese CG animated film. It's about two children, one child of a demon slayer who gets embedded with a demon pearl, and the other child of a demon who gets embedded with, I forget what it's called, but it's the good pearl.
Where was this playing? When was it playing?
It did play in New York. It wasn't G-Kids who was the distributor. I forget the distributor name, but it did play in New York, and I think it played in like major cities as well.
Yeah, to qualify, it has to have been in New York in at least two theaters.
Oh yeah,
and in LA in two theaters for more than a week.
Yeah,
and that's what makes something Academy eligible.
Yeah. And I do believe it played in New York for at least a week to get a theatrical release.
Yeah, I'd never heard of it.
It's an awesome film. It's a beautiful film. It's essentially a Hong Kong film. I regard it as like Joy Hark expanded into a CG universe. Joy, if you don't know Joy Hark, he was the producer of the Chinese Ghost Story. He was the director of Peking Opera Blues, those sort of films. So it's a wonderful fantasy film with great action, great characters, and actually moving character beats.
Is it available anywhere now? On
I do believe it's available on video now.
On video, okay.
Yeah. I'm not sure if it's available on demand at this point.
Well, okay, there's streaming, which is neither video or on demand, but
yeah,
like HBO or you know.
Streaming, I'm not sure it's available streaming. I do believe it's available on video at this point.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so that's two films, Us and the title again?
Ne Zha, N-E space Z-H-A.
Okay, sounds interesting. I'm going to have to look for it.
And I'd be on the fence about this because I had some problems with it, but it probably should be in there as well, Midsommar.
Okay, which is a movie I'll never see. even though I'm a huge Florence Pugh fan.
I know that, and for that you should see it. I do not know her, but she delivers a hell of a performance here. And
you probably do know her, and just don't know that you know her.
Yeah,
I mean she's all around, and believe me, by the time Black Widow comes out, you will know her. Well, she plays Scarlett Johansson's sister.
Oh, okay.
Okay, for example.
But in Midsommar, I mean, with the director here, as with the previous film, he essentially puts her through the ringer, and she delivers.
Oh, she's a brilliant, brilliant actress. I've been watching her for a few years, at least 2 years. The first thing that I noticed her in was the miniseries version of Little Drummer Girl by Jean Le Carré. And she's fabulous in that. I mean, the Diane Keaton version, which everybody put down for some reason, wasn't that bad. But the miniseries version was fabulous, and she turns in one hell of a performance. She was also in King Lear on Amazon streaming opposite Anthony Hopkins, which, you know, ain't hay. And, of course, she's in Little Women. Just name a few, you know, a couple of things this year alone. And next year she's going to be in even more. But
you know what? And in looking at the Oscars, she's actually nominated for supporting actress in Little Women.
I'm well aware of it.
She's in there somewhere.
Yeah. Of the Best Picture nominees, are you looking at a list? I am.
Yes, I am.
Okay, so I'd mentioned to you earlier off the air when we were talking. I thought that we might do three things. Number one, for Best Picture, and don't answer until you've heard all three. Okay. What would you vote for that is in here? Number two, what do you think will win? A predictive thing. And number three, if you could vote for any one film that has been nominated or snubbed or whatever, but would be eligible, what would that be? And and for listeners, let's just run down the titles. They are Ford versus Ferrari, The Irishman, Jojo Rabbit, Joker, Little Women, Marriage Story, 1917, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and Parasite.
Okay, shall I go ahead?
Yes.
Okay, so let me put in the proviso that I have seen four of the five films that were nominated,
ten films. I just named.
Nine films.
Nine films this year.
Up
to ten are allowed to be nominated.
That's an indication of the kind of year it was. Is that they got 10 slots, they could only get 9 films. In there. So there you go.
Of the nine films, which would you vote for if you were a member?
Okay. Of the films that I have seen, the one that I would vote for would be the one I would vote for. Okay. The one I'd vote for, hands down, Parasite.
Okay, which is, by the way, likely to win.
I wonder, because it's also in the international category.
That won't take from it.
I'm thinking it's the current
darling. One of two films are going to win. It's either 1917 or Parasite. We know this.
I'm not sure I know it. I would say that The Irishman.
I'm just going with Hollywood Reporter, The New York Times, and Variety, to name three sources.
Okay.
Let's say Parasite.
Okay.
So, you know, just saying. I take that back. One of them said 1917 is creeping in, but otherwise it's. But Parasite is getting there. And one of the reasons.
I would be delighted if it won. I would be delighted if it won, I hope.
Yeah, I saw I did not see what's the one with the train that's going to be a TV series? Snowpiercer. I have not seen that film of his. I did see his previous one, which was made for Netflix, Ookja, which I loved.
I had real problems with Ookja.
Yeah.
Not
dark enough for you? It is a kid's film.
A little too broad, a little I felt the tone was a little odd. There was sort of the sense of it being sort of this broad kind of kid's film, and then at the very end it turned incredibly dark.
Not incredibly dark.
Yeah. Incredibly dark. From where it started and where it was going, it winds up in that slaughterhouse, and
yeah,
it's like, whoa, that's if it wasn't a 180 degree turn, it was a 90 degree turn.
Compared to The Yearling starring Gregory Peck, which
I haven't seen The Yearling. Bambi.
Well, except that the boy has to shoot the deer.
Yeah, right. Old Yeller?
They really do it. In Okja, he's saved. In The Yearling, it is not saved.
Yeah, well.
So, you know, which is the bigger 180-degree turn?
But I would say, and here again, I didn't see The Yearling, but something like Old Yeller, it's leading up to that.
Yeah.
You know, in this case, I thought it was like all of a sudden it veered over into this direction. I will say about Bong Joon-ho that his first two films, I wasn't particularly enamored of Snowpiercer either, for pretty much the same reasons as Okja. But his first two films, The Host and Mother, were really good. And then here we've now got Parasite, and because of my experience with the two films preceding that, Snowpiercer and Okja, I went into this a little leery about what it was going to be, and I was on the fence for a certain amount of time because of the way the central family.
You know, we've got over 50 titles to go through. So let's move along.
Okay, let's move on. Parasite, hands down, is
what you would vote for. What is your prediction of what will win, since you said you didn't think it would win?
Okay, I'm going to give you two. The one that I think is going to win is The Irishman, because it's like old home week.
Yeah.
The one that I would perversely, and I'm going to drive you crazy because I want to explain this. The one that I think has a chance is Joker, and I'll tell you why.
There are a few people who think that.
Okay, because there is, you know, this tension with the Academy Awards. There's the commercial part of it, and then there's the part where they, you know, they want to declare the best film to be a film that addresses ideas or issues, you know, and the problem
there's actually three parts, because the third thing that often wins best picture or best actor or whatever is when something was seriously snubbed in previous years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then they will vote for a lesser film by the same people,
which is what happened with The Departed.
Exactly.
Yeah. So yes, there is that as well, and in the context of The Joker, we can talk about that. That's because we can talk about that in a bit. But so there is that, but there is this tension, and in particular in, God knows, for the past 5-6 years, been the complaint that the film that won Best Picture is the film that nobody, you know, the commercial audience, the mainstream audience, is not going to see, that the mainstream audience will not go and look for.
Well, that's actually why they extended from 5 to 10. Because that would allow for independent films to get
and
in there.
The commercial and films commercial to be films. In there. And if you'll remember, this past year, there was this talk for a while about creating a new category for, and I forget what they.
Basically, for blockbusters.
For blockbuster films, and a really bad idea.
It was a really bad idea. It had a good intention behind it, because what that would do is that would promote more independent. There are independent films this year, and the idea of that other category was, let's open that up so that more independent films get nominated.
Yeah.
It wasn't thought through all the way, but that was the thinking.
Yeah. No, it was real bad the way they presented it. In any case, my point is that with Joker, you've got a film that deals with...
All I'm asking is your prediction on Sunday night, what will win?
Let me explain this, because I want to explain why.
We don't have time, but go ahead.
Okay.
Like I said, we've got so much to get through.
I could have explained it already, Jim. In any case, with Joker, what we've got is a film that addresses social issues, but that is also the most profitable R-rated film ever. So with this, you've got two things meshed together.
That doesn't – okay. For me, that doesn't make an Academy winner. This is –
And it's probably not, but
okay. But that's would... my. But if it's probably not, then you haven't answered the question.
Well, I did answer the question, The Irishman. But
if somebody
my feeling
right now
is because
to say, I will give you $100 for every correct prediction you make. Which of those nine films would it be?
Oh, I'm not going to make any money on this at all. You know, my instincts.
Dan, this is the question in front of you.
Yeah. My thought is that it will be The Irishman. Okay.
Okay, fine. And then the third one is, if you could vote for any film, nominated or not, what would it be?
It would be Us.
Okay, great.
Not You and Me.
Yeah. Right. As opposed to the one called You. That's a TV series. Okay, now let me do mine.
Or the movie called Them.
Yes, we can do all kinds of...
We can do pronouns all night long.
Pronoun trouble and conjugations. Okay, so let me do mine. My prediction of what will win is Parasite. Mm-hmm. It could be 1917. That's my prediction. What I would vote for, best film of the year, and I've seen most of these, Little Women. Have you seen it?
I have not seen it. No.
See it. It is brilliant, brilliant crafting. What is done the last 10 minutes of the film, what Greta Gerwig does is at the beginning of the film, it opens up with a image of the book Little Women. And by the way, when's the last time you saw a movie? This used to be done all the time.
in the 30s to the 50s.
Is that, you know, from the pages of and the opening shot would be that they would show you a book and open it up. And then bring you into the book. I think they did that actually in Beauty and the Beast. Yeah. So it starts.
They did it in a lot of Disney films. The
movie Little Women starts with a picture of first edition of Little Women by Louisa May Alcott. Now, the very end of the film, spoiler people, is when Joe March. Goes to her publisher's office, sells the book that she has been trying to sell. This is her triumphant moment. And she haggles with the publisher over who owns copyright in the future and so forth. And then she watches the book being made. And at the end, we see her peering at the process, at the binding, at the covers put on. And as the camera pans out, we see the book, Little Women, by Joe March. And then that fades to black with the words, a film by Greta Gerwig. And so you realize that you've just been through this entire meta phase that she's actually worked on as a director and screenwriter on three levels. And there isn't a performance in that film that doesn't work. And also, she does something that no version of Little Women, and this is the sixth, for the record, this is the sixth film of Little Women. There are two silents that have been lost.
Between Little Women and Bojest, how many? Which film has the more remakes?
The last remake of Bojest. The answer is Little. Okay, six versions of Little Women, two of Bojest.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, that's three times as many. What was I saying?
You were saying this was the sixth remake of the many different versions.
This is the first one to actually play with time. In other words, it opens up in Little Women is actually in two books. It opens up in the middle of book two. And the way the other movies open up is in flashback, and it moves. It plays with time a great deal with the different eras of the March sisters and where they have gone. And everybody, you know, the big scene that people tend to remember in Little Women is when Beth dies. In this movie, when it opens, Beth is already dead.
Hmm.
You know, so it does not follow expectations. It really is great film craft, just like the movie that was made this year by her husband, Noah Baumbach, Marriage Story, which she helped write, and he helped write Little Women. They collaborate, these two. It's real cinema of the nine films that were nominated. The Irishman, I have to say, was like, yeah, you sit back, you watch Scorsese with his usual crew, and it's always workmanlike. But you know what? Story didn't do a whole lot for me. And the idea of casting Robert De Niro as playing an Irishman is...
Yeah, I know. Yes, that was one of the things that stuck out for me. It actually worked a lot better for me than I was anticipating. I went into this, first off, it's, what is it? Is it 2.5 hours or 3 hours?
I think it's 3 hours. It's over 3 hours.
It's 3 hours. And by the way, Bleak, Martin Scorsese, I watched it in installments because
I did. Actually, there was a website, I think it was published in The Verge, that said, okay, well, part one, watch until De Niro hangs up the phone on an important call at the, like, I think it was the 47-minute mark. Then part two, you watch until Robert De Niro, quote, leaves the house.
Mm.
So we
know. I know what you're
and
talking
all I'm
about.
Saying is leaves the house, yeah, and you, yeah, and you, yeah, know what that refers to.
It's the next act, yeah.
Yeah, and then the third act. So it worked perfectly. So right. Yeah, I did the same thing. I watched it as a miniseries.
But I did go into it thinking, okay, here we go again. And if you remember, he followed up Goodfellas with Casino, and Casino was like the lesser version of that. And I was expecting The Irishman to be the lesser version of Casino. But it actually, I thought, stood on its own. Here again, I watched it in installments, but, you know, over the 3 hours, the story held up like The Departed. It's not his best film.
It's not his best film, and frankly, outside of the fact that it's a fabulous accomplishment that he did this, and it's Old Boys Week and all that.
Getting the boys back together.
And there's more women in Goodfellas than there are in The Irishman.
Yeah.
I don't think it's Oscar worthy. I think that it's in there because, damn it, Scorsese has made so many films that are Oscar worthy and they didn't get nominated that, you know, as you said, The Departed was all that. I feel The Irishman is sort of his valedictorian film.
Yeah, Exactly, and I think that may be why it stands a chance to be take away the Oscar.
Because
it does feel like valedictorian. It's the same thing as when John Wayne won for True Grit.
Exactly, although I have to admit that I really liked True Grit, both of them.
I don't remember the first True Grit.
John Wayne's is the first True Grit.
Yeah, I
the second
I
one is the Coen Brothers, starring Jeff Bridges.
The Coen Brothers one was very good.
Yeah, and it's closer to the novel. The Rooster Cogburn, the lead character of True Grit, is not a nice man.
Yeah, yeah.
And John Wayne could not play. He played him as a drunk. He didn't play him as a guy who was just as capable of being hired to rob a bank.
Yeah,
which he is. So the Coen Brothers version made that clear, which the John Wayne version, while thoroughly entertaining, and also you have to give it, you know, in the era in which it was made, that they weren't going to, you know, do the Charles Portis novel in exactly that manner. So, but at any rate, I have to admit I have not yet seen Ford versus Ferrari. I loved Jojo Rabbit. It has some moments that are difficult. And I'm not talking about...
Are you talking difficult in terms of how the story is told, or difficult in terms of emotionally?
Emotionally.
Okay.
It is not a comedy throughout.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. Now I'm even further intrigued.
Okay, the Jojo Rabbit, about 70% of the way into the film, takes a very, very, very dark turn.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, one can say no more than that.
Okay.
Marriage Story just isn't my kind of film.
Do you want to finish? Go ahead. Sorry. I'm sorry.
No, actually, you go.
Okay. I tried to watch Marriage Story. I got an hour into it. And at the point that I was an hour into it, I was going, I hate you. I hate you. I hate you. Kid, I hate you. And, oh, look, someone new. I hate you, too. You know, I found the film intolerable.
Yeah. I have not watched it all the way through. I have to say it just felt emotionally manipulative, even though a lot of it is taken out of his life, but that's all the more reason for him to manipulate us in telling his story.
Yeah. I would agree with that, and I'll tell you. Can I give you one particular moment in the film which was the moment where I just threw up my hands? With that, there is a sequence. It's the first time Scarlett Johansson meets with her lawyer, and Laura Dern. Yes, Laura Dern, and she's talking. She's talking about something that happened in the past. I forgot what it was, but she has this one line, and this isn't exact, but this is close enough. She says, "And I was auditioning for a space film, but a serious space film about sex trafficking on the moon, but it turned out to be just the same old porn." And I said, "Okay, either he wants me to think she's stupid, or he thinks we're stupid, or he doesn't know that that line is stupid."
Well, I don't quite agree with that, but I can see where it would annoy you.
Yeah.
But remember, these aren't real people.
These aren't. Yeah, that's the other problem with it, is that they aren't real people.
Well, in all of these films. Including The Irishman, they're not real people.
but these are real.
Okay, so moving on.
Okay, moving on.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I haven't seen it because I understand I would love all of it, but there's no way I'm going to sit through the last 20 minutes.
You know what? I don't recall that because you're afraid of the splooshiness, right?
Gore. It's called gore. It's gore. A very simple four-letter word.
You're afraid of the gore.
No. Let's get it started. I'm not afraid of it.
You don't like gore.
I find it extremely distasteful. When I go to see a movie, I want entertainment. Watching horrible things being done to people's bodies on screen. Happens off screen, I don't care. Even happens to the side of the screen, I don't care. And just a sploosh of blood, I don't care. But on screen, dismemberment, knives entering people's eyes, things being pierced, necks being slit open, or dogs biting off the gonads of people, which is the last 20 minutes of this film.
Well, that's not the entire 20 minutes.
It's a good portion of it. It's
I'm saying that a dog biting somebody's nads off is not the last 20 minutes.
I can't. It's in there.
I don't, you know, I don't remember it as being all that gory, but this may be the case of, gee, Dan, do you think that your extended exposure to all this violence has desensitized you?
And that's what I would say, because I haven't read a review that didn't mention the word gore.
Well, okay, so I'm wrong there. And, you know, I guess my bar is higher.
And when you're discussing Tarantino, he would say, I have little doubt if he were sitting here now, he would laugh and say, well, of course, what do you expect? And by the way, I love Tarantino's work. I love his writing, but it doesn't mean, and I love his directing, but it doesn't mean that I can watch it.
I loved Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I've got a kind of a weird relationship with that film. I kind of feel I came out of that going, Quentin Tarantino is the most perfect imperfect filmmaker.
That's probably a good way to put it. Yeah. But anyhow, that's why I can't relate to it. And the other one, the last one that I want to discuss briefly is 1917, which to me, it's the one-shot thing, which everybody is making, you know, Alfred Hitchcock did it. It's not like the first time this has been done. Well, what's the name of the Hitchcock film? Is it Rope?
Rope.
Yeah.
Rope.
Yeah, okay. Outside of that, it seems like a bit of a stunt more than – and a thrill ride. And, of course, a movie being a thrill ride is a good thing. But I haven't seen it all the way through, and therefore I have to say, yeah, I don't know.
What I've heard from some people is that technologically it's a fascinating film. What I've heard from some people – is that it? I haven't seen it myself. Is that it isn't as much of a thrill ride as you might expect? And let me point out that a good portion of Gravity is it isn't the complete film, but a good portion of it is also done as one take. And
yes, very much so. And it's got as slim a plot as you can possibly get, and yet it was great movie making.
It was a great gripping film.
Yeah,
and possibly it should have been the killer app for both 3D and IMAX, because
even more than that, Avatar. Yeah.
Yes, hands down.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, director. Martin Scorsese, Todd Phillips, Sam Mendes, Quentin Tarantino, and Bong Joon-ho. Which would you vote for if you were a member of the Academy?
Here again, hands down, Bong Joon-ho.
Okay. You know, even though I haven't seen it yet, I would probably agree.
Mm-hmm.
Which do you think will win?
That's, I'm going to go out on a limb and say Sam Mendes.
I think I agree with you. And out of all the films that you have seen this year, nominated or not, to whom would you give Best Director?
I'm going to be really perverse here and say Peter Strickland for In Fabric.
Ooh, okay. That's an interesting choice.
Yeah.
I would go with possibly the most noticeable snub of the year, Greta Gerwig.
Ah, okay. Yeah, that's true. She is not represented here.
Yes, and you know, you heard me describe what she did there, and yes, mm-hmm. she is nominated for Best Picture. She is nominated for Best Screenwriter, but she has not been nominated for Best Director, which is probably the most important thing she did for this movie.
And as always, it's always the question of why is there both a Best Picture and a Best Director?
Well, because they are two different things. One is a specific skill set. The Best Picture, when they announce Best Picture, the person who comes and picks up the award is the producer.
It's the producer. Yeah, I understand that. You understand that I'm coming from sort of the auteurist.
Okay, but if you want to include auteur in American cinema, the producer hires the director.
The producer hires the director, but the director is the auteur. I am sorry.
Except for those times when the author is the auteur.
Well, when is the author? You're saying the writer has control?
Depends on the film and the country in which it is made.
No. You forget about the way film works.
I remember how auteur is defined by Francois Truffaut and Jean-Luc Godard, who coined the term.
And
they're both writers.
I don't know if you heard a different definition from Francois Truffaut.
Well, I've read their magazines.
Okay.
Which is where the whole movement started.
Right, right. But the director is the auteur of the film.
Director is most often the auteur.
Okay.
The word meaning author, by the way.
Yes. Yeah.
But the person who controls the film throughout, and that is often the case in Hollywood, not necessarily because especially now when you have people being fired. For example, who is the auteur of Spartacus, by the way, R.I.P. Kirk Douglas?
Definitely about Kirk Douglas, Stanley Kubrick.
I just walked into your little trap, didn't I? And you explained.
Go ahead.
And explain to the audience why it was a trap, how it was a trap.
Quite frankly, I don't know the history of Spartacus enough.
Stanley Kubrick wasn't the original director. He took over after the movie began. He had nothing to do with the creation of the screenplay. He had nothing to do with the totality of the film. And he had certainly never worked on a big epic before. But Kirk Douglas, who is probably the auteur of the film, he's the producer. He hired the Dalton Trumbo to write it. Based on a Howard Fast novel, this was all Kirk Douglas's idea. Mm-hmm. And he did it in order to star in it, of course. And he's the one who took this unproven... Well, I mean, of course, Kubrick knew Kirk Douglas from Paths of Glory. Mm-hmm. And that is how he brought in Kubrick. And Kubrick is one of the greatest auteurs that cinema has ever seen, but not in Spartacus.
Okay, fair enough.
And he wasn't the original director. I believe it was Anthony Mann.
That sounds about right. But here again, I don't know the history of Spartacus.
Okay. Now, less worthwhile going into at length are mm-hmm. the acting awards, but let's do screenplays. Okay, best original screenplay, Knives Out.
Don't gloss over those so quickly because there are a few things.
I said, Dan, we will get to them.
Okay. So you want to go to
first
screenplay?
But I'm going by what's important. Okay. And screenplay, you know, as long as we're talking about auteurs and things that are, you know, created for the cinema, the next logical thing are the two screenplay awards, then the acting awards.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. So best original screenplay, Knives Out by Rian Johnson, Marriage Story by Noah Baumbach, 1917, Sam Mendes and Christy Wilson Cairns, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Quentin Tarantino, and Parasite by Bong Joon-ho and Han Jin-won. So the first question is, if you're an Academy member, which of those five would you vote for?
Which would I vote for?
Yes.
Parasite. Again, hands down, Parasite.
Okay. For screenplay. And my choice there, I haven't seen Parasite, so I have to disqualify myself. It would possibly be, oh, I just loved Knives Out. Have you seen it?
I have not seen it. I do need to see it.
Yeah,
I like
yourself,
Rian Johnson
Rian Johnson. Give yourself a treat. Yeah.
Yeah. And just to answer the question ahead of time, that's what I think is the one that's actually going to win.
It's going to be Parasite or Knives
No,
Out?
No, Knives Out.
Yeah, a lot of people think it will win. It surprises me. But I think it's possible. It also could be that that's where Tarantino might win his award.
Mm-hmm.
For the same reason, he just hasn't won too many awards. Okay, adapted screenplay. Oh, is there any screenplay not nominated that you would have voted for?
Yeah, I would go for Us again.
Okay. Okay, fine. Adapted screenplay. The Irishman, Jojo Rabbit, Joker, Little Women, or The Two Popes? What do you think, what would you vote for of those five?
Well, I haven't seen Jojo Rabbit, and so that's a weak point there. Of those, since my exposure to this list is limited, I'm going to say Joker.
Okay, yeah, I don't think it'll take that. I think it might take.
No, I don't think so.
You know, it's conceivable that it could come in as picture or director, as you said. I'm not sure about screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I would say Little Women, but I would hedge my bet and say Jojo Rabbit right behind that.
Mm-hmm.
And offhand...
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, offhand, I don't know what other screenplay I would, you know, that hasn't been nominated that I would vote for.
I don't have any myself. Of the ones that I think will win, my guess is Little Women. Because here again, as you're saying, Greta Gerwig did not get a director nod.
Yeah,
so this may be the way of saying here.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right about that. Okay. So two more categories before we get to the actors. Best animated feature film, How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World, I Lost My Body, Klaus, Missing Link, or Toy Story 4. If you remember, what would you vote for?
If I was a member, I would... Oh, God, this is, you know, the indication of how low a bar there is in this is that How to Train Your Dragon got a nomination.
Yeah, you're right.
You know,
Aardman didn't come out with something this year.
Okay, if it was me voting, and here again, I didn't see Toy Story 4. If it was me voting of this list, I would go for Klaus.
Yeah, which I haven't seen, but I'm anxious to see it. But I've also heard wonderful things about I Lost My Body.
I Lost My Body is interesting. I did see that one. And it's an interesting film and definitely worth seeing. I had some problems with the reconciling the more fantastic elements of the story with the more naturalistic elements of the story.
Yeah, my only comment about animated features this year is that, well, first of all, my guess is that Toy Story 4 will win just because it's Pixar.
That's probably
and
right.
And I'm very disappointed that Missing Link wasn't better than it was because and the Two Strings is one of my favorites. And Laika Films, which I think you introduced me to begin with some of their earlier stuff, including Paranorman and The Box Trolls. And they've done some wonderful stuff. And Missing Link just hasn't reached their potential as good as their first few films were.
I think it's a good film. The story doesn't quite clear the bar.
Okay. Best international feature film. I don't think there's much question here, but we'll name them. Corpus Christi from Poland, Honeyland from North Macedonia, Les Mis from France, Pain and Glory from Spain, and Parasite.
Okay. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to tell you which one I'd vote for. I can't opine on any of the other films because I haven't seen any of the others except for Parasite. Parasite would be the one I would vote for.
Okay. And also, I think it's a fair guess that it will win.
Yeah.
I would say that one has to give honor to Pain and Glory, if only because it's directed by Pedro Almodovar. If you want to talk about great auteurs.
Talk about great auteurs,
he's one of them.
Yes, yes.
Okay, actors. Male actors. Antonio Banderas in Pain and Glory, which you just mentioned. Leonardo DiCaprio, Once Upon a Time. Adam Driver in Marriage Story. Gee, he didn't get nominated for Star Wars. Joaquin Phoenix in Joker. And Jonathan Pryce in The Two Popes. First question, if you were voting, who would you vote for?
Joaquin Phoenix.
Okay. And I think he's likely to win.
I think he's got a very good chance. I think Adam Driver has a chance as well.
I think so, too. People are really, really jonesing for him with Marriage Story. So I think Adam Driver has a chance there. Also, he's done a lot of fine work, a lot of fine work. He was in the Report. He's done so much good stuff.
He was good in Black Klansman.
He was really good in this unknown.
This little space movie.
No,
about sex trafficking on the moon.
He was really good in the heist film produced by Steven Soderbergh. That's sort of like the blue collar version of Ocean's. This and that, and is it?
Oh, wow.
Is Logan Lucky?
Oh, geez, yeah, I haven't
Logan
seen
Lucky.
Oh,
that's a wonderful movie. Nobody saw it. It's one, Soderbergh, got out his little camera and filmed it. And Adam Driver is brilliant in that, just absolutely brilliant. Point is, he's been doing all of this amazing work. That most of which has been overseen. He may take it for Marriage Story on merit. While I'm not a fan of Joker, I think Joaquin Phoenix will win. Also, he's done a lot of great work through the years.
Yeah.
A lot of great work. And he's never really been recognized.
Yeah.
Actress.
We didn't talk about who is not on the list.
Okay, who's not on the list that you want?
This is a big one, and I think it's serious. Eddie Murphy.
I haven't seen it yet. Dolomite is my name. My name is Dolomite. Oh, Dolomite is my name?
My name is Dolomite is my name. That's okay. That's the title.
Yeah, so. I do want to see that. I do want to see that. Yeah. I can't say I'm a huge Eddie Murphy fan. He has done some good films, although
he has proven himself before as a very good actor. And the thing about his performance here is you think, well, it's Eddie Murphy and it's Rudy Ray Moore and he's just doing a big thing. But this is not a character.
No, I've heard really good things about his performance. And I know that he's capable of it. But but he hasn't done anything that I care about in 20 years.
Well, because he hasn't done anything in 20 years.
He's not playing films.
Not quite true. But
Pluto Nash? Anybody?
He hasn't done anything of note.
Well, exactly. And if he had been good, it would have been of note.
Yeah.
See what I'm saying? He's been working. He hasn't not been working. He just hasn't been doing good stuff. That might be because
Norbit. Norbit, he essentially went into semi-retirement aside from occasionally coming out to do Donkey.
For the
Shrek movie.
The problem may not be with Eddie Murphy. It might be with his agent, but he's been doing lousy films.
Well, yeah.
I'm not saying he's bad. I'm saying the films are bad. Oh, and Dr. Doolittle. How can you forget the Dr. Doolittle films? No, he's been working.
And his Dr. Doolittle.
Yes.
He is? As a voice? Is he a voice actor?
Excuse me, no. He played Dr. Doolittle.
Oh, the doctor. Way back.
In two films.
That was way before, though.
The second one was what, 6 years ago?
More than that.
You're going to make me call up IMDb, are you?
I'll race you. I'll race you.
Yeah, okay, yeah, do that. Do that.
Okay. Hold on. Keep talking.
Okay. Blah, blah, blah.
You eat, I'll talk.
Okay, yeah, exactly. Oh, come on. Don't give me the sign-in nonsense. Jesus, I've been using this app for God knows how long.
And
they want me to sign in.
2001. Ha! Run rings around you, logically.
The second Dr. Doolittle film?
Dr. Doolittle 2 was 2001,
really?
Baby.
Yes. How time flies when you're having crap films.
When you're not having fun at all.
Yeah, and what are the other films he's done since 2001?
Hold on one second. Let me run down this. Hold on.
Yeah, just look up Eddie Murphy.
Mr. Murphy, looking up Mr. Murphy. Let's see here. So here we are. Now I'm going from here we are. Norbit. Norbit is the cutoff point. Norbit was 2007, 13 years ago. Following that, we got Shrek the Third. Shrek the Halls. Okay, here we are. Meet Dave.
Oh,
imagine
God.
That.
Yeah, okay. Right? Some really bad films there.
Right. Tower Heist. Okay, fair enough. A thousand words.
Okay, so he's been making a bunch of films. They just haven't been any good.
Yeah, okay.
Tower Heist should have
been
good.
Not a bunch of films, but he has kept working. I will concede to that.
Okay. Actress.
Okay, so who would be voting for?
The nominees are Cynthia Erivo in Harriet, Scarlett Johansson in Marriage Story. Help me. Suarez Ronan?
Saoirse
Ronan.
That's how I pronounce it.
Okay, in Little Women. Charlize Theron in Bombshell, and Renee Zellweger as Judy.
Okay. The only one that I have scene, and admittedly, I didn't watch the entire film, but I will grant that her performance was good, was Scarlett Johansson.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And who do you think will win? Oh, there's only one choice.
It's either going to be Scarlett Johansson or Cynthia Erivo.
It's Cynthia Erivo because she's the only person of color nominated.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, that's it.
Better or worse.
Between the eyes, that's...
And I haven't seen Harriet.
And I'm not saying that she isn't great, and I'm not saying that she isn't the best of the five. I'm saying that's why she will win. Yeah. And I would probably vote for her, too. As much as I loved Little Women, it wasn't Ms. Ronan that made it for me, although she's fine. Mm-hmm. Okay, supporting...
Wait a minute. Okay. Who would I like?
Oh, yeah.
Who
would you vote for?
Once again, there's a pattern forming here. Lupita Nyong'o for us.
Ah, except that I might go, oh, you know what movie hasn't been in one freaking category here and that I absolutely loved and I think should be in Best Picture, Best Actor, and Best Supporting Actress? Is Motherless Brooklyn.
Ah, I keep hearing about that.
You don't see it. It is, I believe, the best neo-noir film made since Chinatown.
Mm. Mm.
Plain and simple. If you like Chinatown, you will like this. That simple.
Mm.
But it has been, you know, talk about snubbed. It's been snubbed in every category. Also should have been, I mean, basically Edward Norton should be in, there are certainly people I would bump and movies I would bump in almost every category. I'd bump Ford versus Ferrari and put Motherless Brooklyn for Best Picture in there in a snap. Yeah. Best Director, probably. Adapted Screenplay, I would absolutely nominate him for that. And Best Actor, no question. Bump. Oh, as much as I love Jonathan Pryce, I'd bump him for Edward Norton. That is just a great movie. And what reminded me, of course, is Lupita. That's with, oh, God, now I'm going to be terrible with her name. Ra Mbatha Gugu.
Okay, yeah. I'll give up on that one.
She's brilliant. She's brilliant in that film. Okay, so just saying, you know, that movie is so snubbed that the people who've been ranting about snubs haven't even mentioned that one.
maybe it's just that everybody hates Edward Norton.
Except... It got great reviews.
Yeah, I know it got great reviews, but at least from what I've heard,
people love Fight Club.
How
do people hate Edward Norton? What do they hate him for? Fight Club?
From vague intimations, it's just that he can be a difficult person.
As opposed to how many other directors? I mean, it's in the job description.
Everybody loves Michael
demanding. May. They can be very demanding.
Essentially I'm making a joke there, I don't know, but occasionally politics of the Hollywood enter into
but his movies generally are well received and they have been nominated before.
Yeah.
Again, Fight Club.
Yeah.
That's
but as an actor.
Not for
Fight Club.
Not for directing?
You're talking... He didn't not direct for, Fight Club.
Who did?
The guy... Oh, man. The guy who did Social Network. It's 2:30 in the morning. The name has completely gone out of my head.
Again. I do have IMDb here.
Yeah, and
I did it on the computer rather than on my phone.
Fight Club, and that is, of course, David Fincher.
Of course it is, right.
Thank you, IMDb. Duh.
Okay, but let me
It's getting too late, Jim.
There.
My mind is going. I can feel it.
Now sing Daisy.
Daisy.
Yeah, let's see. Okay, I'm looking for who wrote Fight Club.
Jim, Jim Ohls, whom I do not know at all.
Huh.
Oh, or are you talking about the actual novel?
No, talking about the movie. The
screenwriter was Jim Ohls, okay. UHLS.
Anyhow, Norton had a lot to do with that. If nothing else, I do believe he's the producer.
Yeah.
And when people thanked people for being in Fight Club, you know, winners of awards, and Brad Pitt and all that, it was Edward Norton they thanked.
Right. Just out of curiosity, and I don't know where you were planning to go with this, but I know you did track down some of the nominated short animated films.
Well, let's finish the last two acting categories.
Okay.
Supporting actor, Tom Hanks, Anthony Hopkins, Al Pacino, Joe Pesci, and Brad Pitt. Who would you vote for? Start with that.
I would vote for Brad Pitt.
Okay.
I would vote him above Leonardo DiCaprio.
And I would vote for – he's not nominated in this category.
Yeah, I know that, but I'm saying of the two actors in the film.
The question is, if the ballot's in front of you,
yeah,
DiCaprio isn't on it.
I'm just saying that Brad Pitt's performance, I think, stood out for me, even above and beyond Leonardo DiCaprio.
Okay, but we're talking about these five people.
Right, Brad Pitt.
I would go with Joe Pesci.
Hmm.
He's a brilliant actor. He hasn't done much in years because the screenplays haven't come in for him that are any good. And he got tired of doing, bad kids films that were very popular. but I thought that
he just got tired of having flamethrowers turned on his head.
Yeah. Basically, and I just thought that his was arguably the best performance in that movie.
I wouldn't argue with you about that, actually.
As far as that movie is concerned, I mean, Robert De Niro is Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
He can't help but be great. Same thing goes for Pacino. But
Joe Pesci was playing definitely against type.
His current
Joe
type.
Pesci.
Yeah. I mean, you go back to not Mean Streets, blah, blah, blah.
Goodfellas.
Thank you. Go back to Goodfellas. He was in that vein.
And that's the Joe Pesci. That is, period. Joe Pesci, or the Joe Pesci that we know, the Joe Pesci that we expect. And, yeah, there was more nuance to this.
This is a guy, you talk, it's all these gangsters who somehow you're supposed to like, even though they are evil killers and stuff like that. But somehow Pesci's character, to me, was the most engrossing.
Okay. You're talking me out of it. I'm actually changing my mind here. I think I would be voting for Joe Pesci, too. Mm-hmm. And I think he's the one that's going to take the award.
I agree. I think he's going to win. So actresses, Kathy Bates, Laura Dern, Scarlett Johansson for Jojo Rabbit, Florence Pugh, and Margot Robbie.
Okay, and once again, I've only seen one of the performances here, and I didn't see the movie all the way through, but I did think that what I saw of her performance was good, so it would be Laura Dern.
Yeah, I would vote for her, and I think it's hands down she's going to win.
Hmm. Above and beyond Florence Pugh.
Yes. She was fine in Little Women. She's the first person to turn Amy March into a sympathetic character. She's the brat of Little Women. But because she ends up marrying the lead man instead of Joe, the lead character, instead of Ms. Ronan, and earlier versions, and in the novel, Amy March is this awful brat. And Florence Pugh, working with Greta Gerwig, obviously brought a wonderful nuance to that role that nobody ever has before. Having said that, Laura Dern, who has not gotten her due in years, and many people say that is the performance in Marriage Story. So I'm pretty sure Laura Dern is going to win.
Okay. And I haven't given this enough thought to come up with an additional supporting role.
Okay. So we heard your review last week
right. On
the shorts. I found it very interesting. I've only seen two.
And, which ones?
I saw Hair Love and Kit Bull.
Okay.
And I thought Kit Bull was fun. It reminded me very much of the old Warner Brothers cartoon with the big bulldog and the little kitten that, mm-hmm. that you know, puts its claws into the big bulldog and settles down going to sleep and the dog goes, ooh, ah, ooh, ah. And I thought that this was sort of a modern take on it, but I also felt that it was sort of a demo to show how good these directors, the two women who made it, are.
That's what here again, as I said during the review, this is a new subcategory that Pixar is doing called Spark Shorts,
right?
Which is kind of their incubator.
Disney has one also called Short Circuit.
Yeah, yeah. But this is essentially like their incubator.
Yes, exactly.
For bringing in new talent, and
that's fine. But does an incubator film, does an actor's reel or a producer's reel qualify for a Best Picture?
Of course it does. Of course it does. You know, I think if it's a solid enough film and a solid enough story, and I think this works in that case. But it's you are right in thinking that we are seeing a demonstration of talent here. And I do think that because of the rather unique talent and in particular the way they bring personality and a very cat and kitten like personality to that kitten, that merits the attention it's being given with the nomination.
And I would have to disagree. To me, it looked like the best student film I've ever seen. Hair Love, on the other hand, was fabulous.
It's a lovely film.
It had nuance. It did not go where I thought it was going to go. When you watch it the second time, you can see signals in the beginning that foretell the end, but you didn't realize that it was going there. The comedy of the father trying to do the little girl's hairdo and why and how and the happy ending. Oops, mm-hmm. Spoiler, it has a happy ending.
Well, thank God for the happy ending. There weren't a whole lot of happy endings in this lot.
Yeah, there really weren't. And I didn't think this one was going to I thought it was going to be very sad at the end, very poignant. And it was poignant, but it was happy.
Well, it is poignant. It is moving, but it is, in the end, a happy ending. And you know, as I said in my review last week, one of kind of the problems I'm having with the animated shorts category of the past few years is that there aren't a whole hell of a lot of happy endings.
Yeah.
In the films that are nominated. And it isn't that that's necessarily
a
bad
ending.
Film, but you can do funny. You can do suspense.
Mm-hmm.
There are other types of tales to be told that could be nominated and that don't get.
And you know what I think the problem is? The era in which we live. Trump. In short, there is a mood that that novelists writing science fiction, why is everything a dystopia? Why is everything dark? Why do people you go for the darker the better?
I would counter that with the observation that remember that within these categories, it's the people who are actually specializing in these fields who are voting for the film. So you have animators voting for the animated films. And these people want to go, yes, we can do the Minions and we can do, whatever, the Dr. Seuss animated films, but there's more to us as well. And we can do soulful and we can do serious and we can make animation serious and challenging and
there's
heart-rending.
Always been really good animated shorts, and some of them have been serious through the years. But I have to say that
we're getting an overload of that, and I'm not sure it's so much Trump as it is.
No, I'm saying the era.
What I'm thinking,
we're
going to
remember
which
the
is
era
that these are people who are otherwise working in, you know, doing the Minions films and doing Shrek and stuff like that.
No,
and they're going,
no,
well,
but
we want
is that these are – this era, if we can get to the future, before –
which is in question right at
up till
moment.
Now, it was all called post 9/11. Mm-hmm. And now we're in the Trump era.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it's the one cause. I'm saying that's the name of the era we are in. And that the fact that it is that era – is defining a whole lot of culture.
I will have to go back over the past 3 years and see where kind of this seriously veered into this direction. You know, if it just so happens it happened in 2017.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think it'd be an interesting thesis at the very least.
But it's – well, first of all, the darkness that we've seen in films all start in the post-9/11 era. It's not a new thing. But it's gotten darker, and we've veered from dark into dystopic in general. And I'm not just talking cinema. I'm talking books, television, and some of it just going – so far into psychedelia. last night's episode of The Magicians is like makes Noah Hawley look simple.
Oh, really?
It is.
That's the. And I keep using this metaphor, but that's a high bar to clear, sir. Yeah,
well, I mean, this episode was. Has a good portion of it was about acid. And the depiction of that is funny. And should I.
So we're back to season three of Legion, essentially, yes.
Legion has its moments. I mean, when you're dealing with, oh God, how can I forget her name? One of my favorite actresses, Aubrey Plaza as the Mad Hatter. You're getting fairly interesting. But in this, we're talking about, you know, the color bleeding. Hey, Lester, and stuff like that. Oh, I have a beverage. Thank you. When we're talking about those, this was an actual depiction of a, well, it's sort of a bona fide trip to characters take a pill, which is not just a form of acid, but where you, but everything that happens within it is real. And the depiction of that, including as people move, the after images, the movement of color, the change of color. People who are familiar with these drugs will be familiar with how they did it. And it's like, oh, my duck. It was. And also, I don't know why or how, given that we're in the fifth season and major things have happened in the course of this series, but somehow they have managed to make each and every script this season better and better and better.
Now, you see, I wanted to talk about Legion, and here you go now talking about the magicians. What am I supposed to and I caught myself up on Legion, sir.
So go ahead. You've caught yourself up in Legion, so what is your final verdict?
Okay, here are my thoughts about it, and I'll try to be quick about it. Is that, first off, let me say that because of your enthusiasm about it, I actually went and bought the first two seasons of Legion so I could catch myself up on it. And I do not regret having done that. It is a good series. I think you would agree it's more about style than it is
than substance, about.
Say again, I'm sorry.
It's style over substance.
Yeah, style over substance. I had an interesting thought about it because one of the problems that I was having with it was the fact that he was telling an arcing a story with a seasonal arc, but the story was changing format from episode to episode, and I was trying to figure out why he was doing that. If my first theory was that he was dragooned into doing Legion, and this was, you know, just his way of compensating, having fun. And then I got the anthology of the Shadow King
right.
Okay, and for one thing, and this is what started me thinking, is that
you want to talk about auteur. Don't forget that while Noah Hawley is the showrunner behind everything, he's got different major directors in almost every episode.
This will play into that, I got the anthology, and one of the profound disappointments for me was I thought Bill Sienkiewicz was doing the entire book, and it turns out that no, he does a good chunk of the beginning, and I don't know if he picks it up towards the end or anything, but then there are different artists coming in.
Although if you ask Chris Claremont, he will credit Sienkiewicz, and so did the show.
But what I was wondering was whether Hawley got a hold of that same book and said, look, it's the same story, but there are different artists. What if we could do that with the TV series?
No, I don't think that was the idea. I think that the idea was simply, like, if you break it down, especially there is a point where it slows down, especially in seasons 2 and 3. And what he's doing is he's giving each of the main characters their own journey, their own episode. That's all I think that's about. And it's a little uneven as a result.
It's uneven. I will say one more thing about it, which is,
with 3 minutes to broadcast. Yes.
Okay. Very quickly. I feel that I was disappointed that he abandoned the central idea that he was sort of developing mostly in the first season, the idea of typically with the superhero things, you have the guy in the insane asylum say, no, you're not crazy. You've actually got superpowers. What if it was actually both? And I was hoping that that would be explored more.
I think that once he established it, we were meant to understand that that's exactly what he was doing. That, yes, he may have. Yes, I agree. He has both. And he is a superhero. Actually, he's not a superhero. He's a powered person. He's as much. He's as much of a villain as he is a hero.
Yeah, there's a key distinction there. Yeah. Yes,
but he is a person with the worst personality disorder ever depicted in fiction.
Yeah,
and he's not a good guy. Never was.
Yeah, but all in all, worthwhile trip.
Yeah, definitely. And it's at the end of season two that you go, wait a second, he's not the hero? But I agree that they could have done more, reminded us more about the fact that he is, even though he has redeemed himself and the other bad guys are perhaps more classical bad guys than he is, but he is mentally ill.
Yeah.
And this is a depiction of mental illness.
And by the way, just throwing in, I don't know how much time, very quick. One of the things that I did really like was the timing of how they actually tied it into the X-Men universe.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think that he was looking at the other works in there.
But eventually it comes in, and I like the fact that the fact that it came at a late date.
If you watch episode one very carefully, you will see the wheelchair. It's there. It's there. And in almost every episode at one point, you will see a big circle with an X in it.
With an X in it. That I did notice.
Yeah. But in episode one, you will see Professor X's wheelchair. It's on the side. It's not obvious. But episode one is eminently rewatchable. And watch it again. There's a lot of, I hate the term Easter eggs, but in that case, it applies because you really have to search for it to find it. Okay, we have a minute left, 1 minute, because I have to play theme music.
My final summation, Cats was shortchanged.
Okay, I haven't seen it yet. I will admit to a guilty pleasure of actually having liked the musical, and I'm not an Andrew Lloyd Webber fan. I'll be interested to see it. Hmm. Yeah, that's all I can say there.
Yeah. I was hoping I because I work at the theater, I realize, holy bleep, we may actually have the unfixed version still on our servers, but no, we lost that. So
too bad. At any rate, I would love to do this for another 2 hours.
Why not?
And take, because Lister's here. He'd like to do his show.
And by the way, give Lister a hug from me, please.
I will do that. I will do that for sure. So we are done. So Dan Persons, people find you online how and where?
Go to tor.com and look for my articles there. And if you want, Google Dan Persons at tor.com. You can also go to Facebook at
Historama. You do realize that we're out of time. Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's it. That's it. I'm done.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to hang up. Have a great morning. We'll talk
you
soon.
You too. Bye.
Okay. Bye bye. So, everybody, this has been Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. Thank you so much for listening. Whoops, what did I do here? I killed... Well, oh, okay, somehow. There we go. This has been Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. Reach me, jim@ourwolf.com. I will not be on next week. I'm not sure about Lister, but Paul Fisher and I are preempted, so I suspect I'll be back in 2 weeks. In the meantime, be good to each other. Take care. Send me emails. I said jim@ourwolf.com. Have a good week. Have a good fortnight. Good morning.
hit.
Not Panama, talking about Peru, Azania, Brixton, Belfast, and forget Korea, Beirut, and forget Haiti, Iran, Puerto Rico, Colombia, Mexico. Talk about Uptown, Harlem, New York City, y'all, and Nicaragua, East and South Central LA, California, IA, Miami, do or die, Bed-Stuy, never ran, never will, Brownsville, boogie down, South Bronx, yeah. My man Joey to jail, and now they got him in court because he brought in the flag. That's the name of the game. Well, I quit playing. I doubt the suckers want you to hear what I'm saying about this nation. Freedom supposed to be the format, but I step on your flag like it's a floor mat. Maim and mangle, the star spangle. I'm not trying to diss you. I use the flag like toilet tissue to wipe my black ass. What? You think that I'm a jackass? I see a flag and I attack fast with some fire. My desire to burn what Betty Ross sold up. The truth I show up about America, America, home. Hold on just a mother minute. You gave me freedom of speech in the First Amendment. So why wanna scold me when I torch the flag? I'm only doing what you told me. You don't like it, so what? I'm not scared of you. Your flag, America too. See, I made up this new rule and I want y'all to learn it. Strike a match to the American flag and burn.
Yeah, burn, baby, burn. 99 Cent Alista Live right here at 5 minutes after 3 o'clock. Great show this morning. Jim Freund right here at 99 Cent WBAI. Burn, baby, burn right here. We do this flag burning thing until we do this flag burning thing until 5 o'clock. Right here at your favorite radio station, WBAI. This is Miguelito Rose on 99 Cent. Listen.
I read the news today. From the House of Love, I saw a film today. Oh boy, the English army had just won the war. A crowd of people turned away, but I just had to look.
noticed I was late. I found my coat and grabbed my hat. I made the bus in second flat. Found my way upstairs and had a smoke. Somebody spoke and I went into a dream.
Of the warmest thing I have, sister Brenda.